Very happy to have with us for this morning's Srimad Bhagavatam class, His Grace Krishna Abhishek Prabhu. Krishna Abhishek Prabhu is, as I already introduced him in December, he's just completed his PhD in theology from University of Chicago. He's one of the top theology schools in the whole world. And he's now also consulting many prestigious universities on their academic curriculum. And he's been networking with scholars to collect all of our ancient Gaudiya Vaishnava literatures, original transcripts of the great acharyas. And he was very instrumental in setting up the Bhaktivedanta Research Center, BRC, at Kolkata, where you can go and actually see all of the original writings of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srinivasa Acharya. All of those, you know, have been preserved and kept there. And he is here on a, you know, special mission called by some of our very important education experts in Mumbai. And so he also decided to spend some time giving association to the devotees. Let us welcome him by loudly chanting, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from 10th Canto, chapter 16, verse 36 to 38, but we'll read the first one, and then 38 has a purport. Kasyanu bhava asya nadeva vidmahe tavangri renus parasha adhikaraha Yadvanchaya Srir Labhanacharattapo Vihaya Kaman Suchiram Dhritavrata. Translation. O Lord, we do not know how the serpent Kaliya has attained this great opportunity of being touched by the dust of your lotus feet. For this end, the goddess of fortune performed austerities for centuries, giving up all other desires and taking austere vows. We'll read the next two verses since it says 36 to 38. Those who have attained the dust of your lotus feet never hanker for the kingship of heaven, limitless sovereignty, the position of Brahma, or rulership over the earth. They are not interested even in the perfections of yoga or in liberation itself. O Lord, although this Kaliya, the king of serpents, has taken birth in the mode of ignorance and is controlled by anger, he has achieved that which is difficult for others to achieve. Embodied souls who are full of desires and are thus wandering in the cycle of birth and death can have all benedictions manifested before their eyes simply by receiving the dust of your lotus feet. Purport. It is very rare for a conditioned soul to free himself from the contamination of illusion and thus become established in perfect consciousness of the absolute truth. And yet, this benediction was achieved by the serpent Kaliya because the Lord personally danced upon the serpent's hoods with his lotus feet. Although we conditioned souls may not receive the mercy of having the Lord dance on our head, we can receive the dust of the lotus feet of the absolute through the Lord's representative, the bona fide spiritual master, and thus go back home, back to Godhead, forever freed from the misery and ignorance of the mundane universe. Padki Jai. So I haven't had much chance to prepare, but I was meditating on this verse today morning and took up some notes. Somebody told me that this is a very special verse, so what we'll do towards the end of this class is have an interactive session where you give your commentaries on this verse, right? But as I was reading this chapter, there are three points about the context of the chapter that I noticed. And there are three major points that I'll cover through this class. In terms of the context, we have the demon Kaliya appear practically from nowhere. Things were going more or less fine in Vrindavan, except a few demons coming in and, you know, heckling a few people from time to time. But when Kaliya entered the river, it wasn't apparent in the beginning, right? The water started bubbling and boiling and the fumes were coming out and the cows were dying and it wasn't a happy situation. But, you know, it wasn't that apparent. Kaliya was underwater, right? Till Krishna took a pretext and jumped in and had a tussle with Kaliya and ended up dancing on Kaliya's hoods, right? So these two, you know, kind of destructive things were happening. One, Kaliya was destroying the waters of Yamuna, and then Kaliya was destroying the ambience of Vrindavan, till Krishna comes in and destroys the poison of Kaliya. And if you go towards the end of this Leela, you'll see Krishna banishing Kaliya. Whereas Krishna kills the other demons, Krishna banishes Kali, and we'll reflect more on that. Right? When I was thinking about this verse, the first thing that came to my mind were Mahaprabhu's Shikshashtakam. And in a way, although Kaliya was creating havoc in Vrindavan, what the verse suggests is that he was actually very fortunate, right? Because the Nagapatnis say, Lord, we do not know how the serpent Kaliya has attained this great opportunity of being touched by the dust of your lotus feet. Right? And if you remember the Shikshashtakam, last verse says, Aslishya vapadaratam vinashtumam. Now, padaratam is a samasa, a nominal compound in Sanskrit, which means somebody at your feet or somebody at somebody's feet. Right? But Sanskrit is a very versatile language, so you can play around with words. So padaratam also means somebody who's under the feet. Pinashtu means to crush. And if you look at Kaliya, he's being pinashtud under Krishna's feet. And in a way, in a vyatireka sense, you know, in Bhagavatam first verse we say vyatireka, which means an indirect way. Janmadya sajata anvayat itarachasya artheshu abhigyasvarat, right? Itaratascha artheshu. Itarata means indirect. So sometimes you get embraced directly, sometimes you get an embrace indirectly. Right? Direct embrace, the Gopabals and the, you know, Gopikas and Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, they were getting direct embraces from Krishna all the time. But Kaliya is very fortunate because he gets an indirect embrace by Krishna dancing on the hoods. Right? Adarshanat marmahatam karotuva. And then, you know, Krishna actually kicks Kaliya out of Vrindavan. Gives adarshana. Yatha tathatu vidadhatu lampato matprananathas. And Kaliya is a devotee. He remains a devotee forever. Right? So that was the first reflection on this verse, that sometimes Krishna may appear to be very kind of, you know, Krishna may seem to kick out our plans. We keep praying, Krishna, give me this, give me that, this, that, you know, Lord, let this happen. And Krishna gives a tight kick on our plans and we don't know where we are. And we don't know where the kick came from. Right? But in a way, when we pray, Aslishiva padaratam pinashtumam adarshanat marmahatam karotuva, in an abhasha sense, in a shadow sense, we are actually receiving mercy, even when Krishna is kicking us. So that was the first point of this Leela. And then the Bhagavatam mentions that when Krishna jumped into the water, the Gopikas felt void, shunyan. The whole world felt empty to them. Govinda virahename, shunnaitam jagat sarvam. Right? For the Gopikas, the world became empty when Krishna entered. right? And each second felt like a whole yuga. Right? So we see Shikshashtakam in action in Kaliya Leela. Right? And then I started thinking, how do we understand this Leela? How to understand this pastime? And you know, now that we've gone through the context, our acharyas have specific methods of approaching particular sections of the Bhagavad. The two major methods are the Rasika method, the what we can call the aesthetic method, the beautiful method, and the other one is the Siddhanta method, right? The philosophical method. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote two commentaries on the Bhagavad Gita. The first one was called Vidvat Bhanjan, defeating or kind of engaging with the intelligent, Vidvat. And the other one was called Rasika Ranjan. Rasika Ranjan means entertaining the people who already have some bhav or some rasa for Krishna. So he wrote these two commentaries, and if you ever get a chance, I don't think both of them have been translated. One of them have been. But if you ever end up reading the two commentaries, you will notice that there is a lot of common point. Only in the Vidvat Bhanjan, he will go write a few extra sentences which talk very deeply about some philosophical point. And in the Rasik Ranjan commentary, he will ignore philosophical points. So it doesn't matter. You know, this is the beauty of Krishna. This is what he was doing. This is how it works. So when I read those two commentaries and some, you know, Vishwanath Chakravarti, for example, writes mostly a Rasika commentary. He will look at a particular verse and give a very beautiful meaning that you won't even normally think about. Baladev Vidyabhushan, on the other hand, is a Vedantic Acharya. So he would write a very philosophical commentary, and you know, for people like us who are neither Rasika nor Vidvat, we get a headache. Right? Prabhupada, on the other hand, does something very unique. He blends the two. So his commentaries sometimes can be very Rasika if you have an eye for it, but mostly Vidvat. Right? So he combines all our previous acharyas and he writes these commentaries. And I'll follow in their tradition and start reflecting point by point, sometimes on a Rasika way, sometimes on a Vidvat way. The first point about this particular section are the prayers. These are prayers by Nagapatnis, right? And if you look at the prayers generally in over Srimad Bhagavatam, there are two observations we can make. The first observation is prayers are a reflection of our own condition, right? Of our human condition. And it's a very legitimate way of praying. So a prayer becomes a mirror of who we are and the situation we are in, right? And the desperation and the helplessness that we face while we are praying. For example, when Prabhupada is going to the United States, he writes Markina Bhagavad Dharma, which means Bhagavad Dharma in America. And he prays that, Krishna, I am helpless. I don't think anybody will listen to me. All these people are in Rajastama. But if you want, you pull the strings like an expert puppeteer and make me dance, make me dance, make me dance. Right? When Gajendra is in trouble, the crocodile has kind of almost seized him. And you know, the whole pastime of Gajendra is where you are fighting against all odds, right? In a way, similar to Prabhupada's prayer. Prabhupada is fighting against all odds in the Western, you know, coming to Boston and New York. And Gajendra says, you know, you are this, he remembers a prayer from a previous lifetime and prays. Kunti Devi in the Bhagavatam says, Krishna, I want these troubles to come back again and again in my life because every time these troubles appear, I see you. But if you look closely at these prayers, these are a reflection of a particular human condition that these great Mahatmas are in at that moment. A prayer is like a mirror of what is happening to them and around them. Right? I mean, you do not see Prabhupada saying that, oh, a crocodile has caught me. No. Prabhupada prays about a specific context that he is in. And it's a reflection of the challenges that he is facing. So that's one level of prayer. But if you look at the prayers of devotees, there is the other side, where they start talking about how great you are and how wonderful you are and how amazing you are, right? And there the split occurs, right? On a transcendental level, there is this thing, Krishna, please protect me. And there is the other kind of prayer which says, Krishna, I'm in it for you, right? It's a prayer is a W-O-W, wow, expressed in words, right? And that's what we see the Nagapatnis talking about here. You know, they say, we don't understand how Kaliya, who was creating havoc, actually got so much mercy, right? Whereas Lakshmi herself, who's serving and pressing your feet through eternity, doesn't experience or doesn't achieve this kind of mercy. What happened, right? And then some more reflections on that, and a disclaimer here. I'm talking about my own condition rather than yours, and I'm going to use Bhaktivinoda Thakur to look at this particular verse, because I spent most of my life studying Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he has a very unique way of approaching the Bhagavat, right, in his book, The Krishna Samhita. He says that there are various ways you can approach the Bhagavatam. In particular, although he doesn't quote it, he uses the method listed in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Mahaprabhu and Sanatana Goswami are having a conversation about Atma Ramascha Munayo. And Mahaprabhu starts explaining the Atma Rama verse, and Sanatana Goswami is astounded. He's completely astounded. And then Sanatana Goswami says, how is this possible? This is amazing. And Mahaprabhu quotes, or Mahaprabhu speaks two particular verses. He says, Krishna tulla bhagavat bibhu sarvashray pratishloke prati akkhare nana arthakay. Krishna tulla bhagavat. The bhagavat is comparable to Krishna himself. Bibhu, it is great, it is sarvashray. Pratishloke, in every verse. Prati akkhare, not just in verse, every syllable. Nana arthakay, it explains different meanings. So it's not that Bhagavatam will have only one meaning. Each verse will have hundreds and thousands of meanings, and that is why Ananta can never tire of speaking the glories of Krishna, because each syllable of the Bhagavat has many meanings. And then Mahaprabhu gives a disclaimer. He says, Prashnottare Bhagavate koriyache nirdhar jahar srabone loke lage chamatkar. This Prashnottare Bhagavate koriyache nirdhar. Nirdhar means to ascertain, right? And this is a very important point, because the Bhagavat is a commentary on Vedanta, right? And it is an expansion of the Gayatri. And I'll give you a proof of that right now. Look at the board there, right? Do you see the word Vidmahe? The word Vidmahe is, I don't want to give out the Gayatri here. It would be a disaster. But the word Vidmahe is one of the seeds of the Gayatri mantra. It's one of the bijas of the Gayatri. And in this way, through using the word Vidmahe, or through using the word Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, the Bhagavat is an expansion of the Gayatri and the Vedanta. Right? Starts with Janmadi Asya Yataha. So if you read the Bhagavat carefully in Sanskrit, you will see the Gayatri spread around the Bhagavat. The Bhagavat is an expansion of the Gayatri. So those who are concerned about not having received the Brahman initiation yet, here's the de facto solution for you. Read the Bhagavatam. You'll be chanting the Gayatri without understanding it. Right? But see, that was at least one explanation of the whole Bhagavatam. But then Mahaprabhu says, Proshnottare Bhagavate, Koriyachi Nirdhar. Nirdhar is Vedanta Sutra. So there is a particular philosophy. And how is it explained? Through questions and answers. It is not a monologue. It is a dialogue. And whenever there is doubt, there is a process of clearing off that doubt. So Parikshit Maharaj keeps asking questions, expressing his doubts, and Shukadeva Goswami keeps cleaning out and taking out those doubts, right? And what happens through that process of question-answer is that you come up with a specific Siddhanta, right? So it's not that you look at the Bhagavatam and you can come up with any meaning you want, because through Prashnottar, through question and answer, a particular Siddhanta has been Nirdharita, right? And Prabhupada speaks about the two kinds of speculation. The first is mental speculation, where you go through bottoms-up logic. You start with whatever intelligence you have in your head and try to figure it out. And the other one is philosophical speculation, where you see the logic of the Bhagavatam to begin with, you see the Siddhanta, and then you use your rational logic to understand it. So that is Nirdhara. And then Mahaprabhu gives another criteria to understand Bhagavat. He says, Jahara Shrabane Loke Lage Chamatkar. Chamatkar means amazement. So the test of Bhagavat and the test of the explanation of the Bhagavat is, once you hear the exegesis, you feel, oh my God, this is beautiful. Not chamatkar. Chamatkar doesn't mean, oh, it's a brilliant idea. That's asadharan. Right? Chamatkar means amazing. It touches your heart. It does something to you. That's the test of the Bhagavat. And then once we have those three criteria in, then Krishna Tulla Bhagavat. Bhagavat is equal to Krishna. Bibhu Sarvashray. Now Krishna is called Ujjwal Nilamani by Rupa Goswami, like a blazing sapphire. And I wanted to use that metaphor to go further in the Kaliya Leela. If you ever see a sapphire or a diamond, every angle you turn the diamond around, you will see light getting reflected in a different way. If you know the science of diamonds, a diamond doesn't look the same from all angles. That's why if you see expert diamond businessmen, the first thing they take the diamond, look it in the sun, turn it or start turning it around, starts experiencing the various qualities. And I think that is a good metaphor of studying the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is Krishna. Krishna is Ujjwal Nilamani. Bhagavat is Ujjwal Nilamani. We are, Shukadeva Goswami says, Muhura Horasika Bhuvi Bhavukaha. We are aspiring Bhavukaha. So we, you know, although we don't know the science of diamonds, it doesn't hurt to pick up the diamond and at least turn it around and look at the light coming from various angles and experience its beauty, right? And Bhaktivinoda Thakur does precisely that. He says, Bhagavat can be approached by two kinds of people and three classes of people. The two kinds of people are the Saragrahins and Bharavahins. The Bharavahins look at the Bhagavatam, try to figure out and say, this is historically inaccurate, the philosophy is confusing, and there is an academic book, I don't recommend you read it unless you're doing academics, called The Advaitic Theism of the Bhagavat Puran. So the argument of the book is, well, the Bhagavatam is really Advaitic. They missed Krishna, somehow. I don't know how. Don't ask me. You say Advaitic Theism. It's theistic, but it's Advaitic. It's a famous book, you know. I mean, since you are in the Hare Krishna movement, you do not know about it, which is good in a certain way, right? But, you know, they even failed to pick up the diamond, and they thought, well, that looks like a crystal glass, right? But as devotees, we know how to pick up the Bhagavata, the Ujjwal Nilamani of Bhagavat, and by the grace of Guru and Vaishnavas, we can turn it around and see the rays of light passing through and experience the Bhagavat. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that's what Saragrahins do. They seek the essence of Bhagavat in a way that is particularly applicable to them. Right? He says that is my approach to the Bhagavatam. He says, our previous acharyas have written commentaries for Kanishtha Adhikaris, what he calls Komala Shraddhas, and Uttam Adhikaris. So sometimes acharyas were explained very simple point and try to preach at a very novice level. Sometimes acharyas will take you to the highest platform so that you will come out bewildered and don't know what this person is talking about. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the need of the hour in the modern world is to explain the Bhagavatam from the level of Madhyam Adhikaris. And he says that is what I try to do in the Krishna Samhita. He says if you want to understand Bhagavatam through either Kanishtha level or Uttam level, go read Vishwanath Chakravarti, go read Sanatan Goswami, go read Sridhar Swami. If you want to understand the Bhagavatam as a Madhyam Adhikari, here's the book. And he gives very specific interpretations of all the leelas happening in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. And he says that Kaliya represents brutality and treachery. Right? He takes each and every demon in Krishna Leela and says, these demons represent something specific in our lives. He says, for example, Putana. Putana represents the pseudo-guru. Right? And then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati wrote further commentaries on this particular idea and explained the point that Putana, when Putana entered Vrindavan, everybody thought, oh my God, she's such a beautiful lady. She looks like the goddess of fortune. She's this, she's that. And Putana said, I want to breastfeed Krishna. And everybody said, please, please, go ahead. But Putana's real intent was to poison Krishna. And Bhaktisiddhanta says, Putana are spiritual institutions that has an external show of doing great work, great preaching, great this, great that, because everybody thinks, oh my God, he's here to serve Krishna. But with an internal motive, an ulterior internal motive. The moment, he said, and he was talking indirectly about the Gaudiya Math, the moment you stop the intent of serving Krishna internally, you become like Putana. Right? And, well, I leave it at that. Because this is Kaliya Leela, we'll focus more on Kaliya. Kaliya represents brutality and treachery. Right? And following in the footsteps of Bhaktisiddhanta, I'd like to expand on this particular concept of Kaliya. If you look at Kaliya, there were two things. First of all, he was internally not very Krishna conscious. He was enjoying his life in the riverbed of Yamuna. He did not concern himself with the welfare of anybody outside. He had four wives enjoying his life. And then he was not concerned about the havoc he was creating outside. Right? And in a way, and that is why I give the disclaimer that this is more like a confession box for me. I'm talking about myself rather than all of you. In a way, that represents our mood. You know, we sometimes are not concerned with how powerful our footsteps could be. Right? Small things that we end up doing can affect people in a large way. Sometimes when we engage and interact with devotees, we may carelessly say a few words, you know, thinking that this is good management practice, but sometimes it can scar a devotee for life. So we need to be careful, right? And in the material world, it goes off even more. That, you know, you can abuse each other and, you know, I know I've seen so many friends when they call each other, they don't even say hello. They just pick up the phone and then a series of verbal abuses. That is their way of saying hello. They don't concern themselves about the footprint they are leaving out, right? And even on other dimensions, and you know, I do not want to go too much into detail, but say, for example, when we use plastic bottles, right? For our own immediate need, we do something and the bottle goes out and we, you know, plastic bottle takes about 1,000 years to degenerate. And around the earth, landfills are overflowing. And when we toss a bottle into the dustbin, we don't even think of our footprint. And when we ride airplanes, we don't even think about how much carbon footprint we are leaving behind on Earth. So I personally taken a vow that I will not never go to a place or ride an airplane unless I have a major seva to perform. Just an idea for you. Right? But Kaliya in Vrindavan has also an internal meaning. Right? Kaliya could represent, and we can, one of the ways of looking at Kaliya Leela would is to think about Kaliya as our own tongue. Just the way our tongue decides our internal health and external health, Kaliya was a deciding factor in the internal health of Yamuna and the external health. Right? If you keep consuming things without thinking, you know what happens to the body. I've had first-hand experience. And many of devotees, especially true of new devotees, because once we join, prasadam becomes the only entertainment. Right? After a couple of years, we start thinking, maybe we need to go on a diet plan. And then since Gauranga Prabhu is here, and I haven't discussed this with him, but just to uplift his mood, a lot of feedback, transcendental sound vibration keeps going to the cooks in the kitchen department. See, he's the only one who laughed. Right? Aise hona chahiye, waise hona chahiye, poha har subah hona chahiye. Right? I've heard of some feedbacks like that. But you know, after some time people get concerned, and if you go out in the real world, you'll see that dieting and health is a big industry. Huge industry. And in fact, if you're interested, I can show you a little device I got just out of, you know, kind of amusement, called a pedometer. Have you heard of a pedometer? A pedometer is a small meter that you fix on your hip when you go out for a walk. By the time you come back, it tells you how many steps you've taken, how many miles you've walked, and how many calories you've burnt. So, I hope it doesn't become the new brahmachari fad. Right? But at some point, we are concerned about what goes through the tongue. Right? The tongue decides how our health functions. The tongue decides how our mind functions on an immediate level and extended level. If we are expecting a certain kind of food and we are craving a certain kind of food, then I know in a brahmachari ashram it's difficult. And also in grihastha ashram, you know, I mean, the kid wants something, the wife wants something else, and the husband is in mood for something else. The husband is in mood for Chinese, the kid wants Mexican, the wife says, no, we cooked Indian today. It happens all the time, right? Brahmachari ashram, it expands into 100 brahmacharis here. So 100 people have 100 different food craving every day, but there are only 5 limited courses or 10 limited courses, right? So so on the immediate level, when our tongue is not satisfied, something goes wrong in the head. You know, the thermostat goes off. It happens, right? And in the long term, if you're, you know, America faces huge obesity problems, then that is a result of how people use their tongue. And then, you know, obese people are usually in the couch. The only exercise they have, this is, somebody told me, and this is the exercise they do. I said, why don't you get some exercise? He says, oh, right. This is what they showed. This is finger exercise. And the only exercise they have is pressing the remote control button, right? And somebody told me, actually, if you eat celery, it is negative calories because it takes more energy to chew and swallow a piece of calorie than celery stick. It is, the celery stick has less number of calories than it takes to actually chew and eat it. So if you're chewing celery all the time, you'll probably grow thin, right? So these people are also concerned, and they get into a depression, anxiety of having heart attacks, and you know, the body is related to the mind. So either short-term or long-term, what you consume affects your mind. And the other way the tongue functions is, you know, how you speak, the kind of sweet words you say to the world decides what kind of relationships you have. And if anybody of you have been in the business world, in the corporate world, you know, at a certain level, it's not about pressing buttons and being in your cubicle. It's about going out and talking to people and forging communication and relationships and networks. And that all depends on how your tongue vibrates. Right? And very often, we destroy relationships because of our tongue. So we destroy relationships with our own body and mind because of our tongue. We pollute the internal ecology, the internal atmosphere. We pollute the external ecology and atmosphere of relationships and the world because of how our tongue functions. Right? And the solution to that we have, and Prabhupada says in this purport, that although we conditioned souls may not receive the mercy of having the Lord dance on our head, we can receive the dust of the lotus feet of the absolute through the Lord's representative, the bona fide spiritual master, and thus go back home, back to Godhead. Now, how does that happen? Now, Krishna will not come and dance on your head. We are not that fortunate. I wish. But there is another way Krishna can dance on our tongue. And when I received my initiation, I had the audacity to ask a question to my spiritual master. Because, you know, I read Prabhupada Lilamrita and I had all these kind of fantastic ideas of guru is going to give one instruction that you follow. Instructions eventually came later. But the only instruction that we got on the day of our initiation is chant your 16 rounds sincerely. That's the only seva you can do for me. Right? That's the first seva. And by the mercy of the spiritual master, Krishna may not dance on your head, but Krishna will dance on your tongue. And with every kick, you can call it a kick, or you can call it an embrace. Krishna is embracing our tongues every morning when we chant the holy names. And with every kick, some poison goes out. Right? And we start getting purified. The sound enters our ears, starts with the tongue, enters our ears, goes to the heart. The poison starts disappearing somehow. Right? By speaking the Bhagavatam, you are letting Krishna, Ujjwal Nilamani, dance on our tongue. Right? And then the poison starts disappearing. By eating prasadam, we are letting Krishna dance on our tongue. Because mind you, when Bhagavatam says, dust of Krishna's feet, dust doesn't mean soil on Mumbai roads. Dust means something that has touched the feet of Krishna even inadvertently. The dust never decides, now I'm going to touch Krishna. Gopabalas are on a higher level, they can decide that. Krishna is standing there, let's race and touch him. The dust just lies there, and Krishna walks over it, and the dust comes to the feet of Krishna. Dust are those things that get in touch with Krishna inadvertently, like the food we have for prasad. Same food growing everywhere, but that food that gets cooked in our kitchens, offered to Krishna, gets inadvertently touched by Krishna's feet. And that dust can touch the tip of our tongues, and Krishna can dance on there. And that is how Krishna can dance on our tongues and cast the poison out, right? So, looking at the Bhagavatam in this symbolical way of inviting Krishna to dance on our tongues for kind of enhancing our internal health, our spiritual health, our mental health, and the relationships outside, our connection with the world outside, right? It starts with three simple things: chanting, speaking, eating, singing, talking to each other, right? Krishna says, Machitta madgata prana bodhayante parasparaha. Right? That's what devotees do. That's also when Krishna is dancing on your tongue. When you're talking to devotees, that is a foundation of beautiful relationships. Krishna is dancing on the tongue because Krishna is the central aspect of those conversations. Machitta madgata prana bodhayante parasparaha. Therefore, the result is tushyanticha ramanticha. It is satisfying. It is very enjoyable. And that's what I would think Mahaprabhu would say when he if he heard this verse and, you know, use his verses from the Chaitanya Charitamrita commentary. That jahar shrabone loke লাগে চমৎকার। টু কনক্লুড, ওয়ান থিং দ্যাট ওয়ান ওয়ে অফ মেডিটেটিং অন কালিয়া লীলা ইজ টু মেডিটেট অন কৃষ্ণা পার্সোনালি ডান্সিং অন আওয়ার টাং ডিসপাইট আস নট বিইং ইন দ্য পজিশন অফ লক্ষ্মী অর এনিবডি এলস অর ইভেন দ্য নাগপাতনিস অ্যান্ড মেডিটেট ওয়াইল উই আটার দ্য মন্ত্র দ্যাট কৃষ্ণা ইজ অ্যাকচুয়ালি ডান্সিং দেয়ার ওয়াইল উই ইট প্রসাদম জাস্ট হ্যাভ থট দ্যাট কৃষ্ণা ইজ অ্যাকচুয়ালি ডান্সিং হিয়ার অ্যান্ড দ্য ফ্লেভার দ্যাট উই এনজয় ইজ কৃষ্ণাস ডাস্ট ফ্রম কৃষ্ণাস লোটাস ফিট ওয়েন উই টক টু ইচ আদার অ্যান্ড এক্সপিরিয়েন্স ব্লিস ইট ইজ কৃষ্ণা ডান্সিং অন আওয়ার টাংস অ্যান্ড লেট কৃষ্ণা ডান্স অন আওয়ার টাংস ফর এভার থ্যাংক ইউ হরে কৃষ্ণ Comments, questions. Now is the community section of Bhagavatam class. Why don't you get a microphone so that everybody could hear you?
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhu.
And after you, Sarabhuj Prabhu.
As we were discussing about, I think in the third verse, Srila Prabhupada mentions about how the living entity leaves the spiritual world and comes here to the material world. This controversy always comes. People ask you, and we give them different analogies. Srila Prabhupada says, would you also like to mention something, put some light about this very controversial question of why the jiva leaves the spiritual world where Krishna is always protecting everyone. Everyone is so blissful, so happy. It is said that at one point he decided to leave and come over here. So we give different understanding. Recently somebody was asking me this direction.
I was blissful and happy till you asked that question. Why did you put me on the spot? You know the verse that we mentioned today from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Tullo Bhagavat Vibhu Sarvashray Prati Shloke Prati Akkhare Nana Arthakay. The approach I have to the controversy that you're talking about is through a sutra I constructed called Paradoxical, Not Contradictory. Right? Some of the answers that we listen or hear about Bhagavatam seem contradictory to us. What we are really facing is a paradox, not a contradiction. Paradox are two elements that in the human mind cannot exist simultaneously, cannot coexist, but in reality it does. Right? And bheda bheda in a certain sense. Personally, and we can have a discussion about it if later, I feel that we tend to think that spiritual world is non-local. As far as spiritual world is local, which is true. But for example, if you go to Navadvip Dham, right, you can experience the spiritual world right there. And so many people are entering Navadvip Dham, they just, buy a ticket, go there, eat nice prasadam, bathe in the Ganga, which is great. But they don't experience the spiritual world. So the spiritual world can manifest in the material domain, right? Now, that would mean that even in this lifetime, some people experience the spiritual world, right? And when they experience it, and I will not get into inroads here, when they experience it, they are not fallen. Right? And I'll stop there. If we start a conversation, we'll end up writing about 10, 15 books responding to each other, and then we'll be dead. Right? But again, my personal approach to these kind of controversies, and that's a baby controversy, which is big within devotional philosophical circles, but I deal with other things too all the time. The one approach that Bhaktivinoda Thakur suggests is that, you know, you'll not understand everything. Life is short. And in fact, life is too short to be small. Do something big in devotional service. Even the Bhagavad Gita, simple text, apparently, we cannot fathom the whole thing. Thousands of commentaries have been written and people don't agree on it. Right? So, as Vaishnavas, we need to be Saragrahins in the sense, look at the portions that is relevant for our devotional enhancement. So whenever I come across a controversy like that, I ask myself the question, how does it affect my life right now? Right? How does it affect my preaching? I can get around it. So my point there would be, don't try to fix what's not broken. That's not a part of your life that is broken, or that's not a part of your Siddhanta that is broken. So no point fixing it, right? Focus on the relevant parts, because this is too vast for us to cover in a lifetime anyway. Focus on the relevant, that's what I personally do, of course. You know, all of you would be different individuals, approach the problem differently and have very different solutions. But I just wanted to put my perspective on the table, right? It doesn't really require a headbanging on the wall to figure out answers, because sometimes there are no answers, right? Sarabhuj Prabhu, how long do we go on for? Should we finish here? One last question and then we can... Anybody else? Any questions? We can hang out for maybe 10 minutes after the class. If you have, we can talk personally.
Thank you for the stimulating class, Prabhuji.
Sorry?
Thank you for this very stimulating class.
Thank you.
I thought it was a classic.
When your back's against the wall, you have to perform.
This point that you made in the class about Kalia not being killed by Krishna, and you left it saying that we'll talk about it later.
Oh, okay.
So I was thinking whether you could just...
Yeah, I will refer back to a Bhagavad class that our Prem Das Prabhu gave in 2010 or 11. And he was sitting right here and I was at the back of the room and he said something that really touched me. He says, the essence of devotional Vedanta, and you know, both he and I like thinking in sutras, is the essence of devotional Vedanta is matter matters and senses make sense. Matter matters. Because Advaita in ideas, matter doesn't matter. Mind, don't mind. Sense, no sense. Nonsense. Our philosophy is matter matters. The world is real. And senses make sense. So Krishna doesn't kill our senses. But our senses start existing on a spiritual realm, in a spiritual dimension. Senses remain. It's just that the poison is kicked out of it. Right? And in Yoga Sutras, since Prem Das Prabhu was describing the Yoga Sutras, I'll follow his lead. Otherwise, I teach Yoga Sutras at the university. The Yoga Sutras in the Raj Yoga, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur says is very conducive for devotional service, there is a section called Pratyahara. Right? Pratyahara means withdrawing senses. And various commentaries give various explanations. One metaphor used as an explanation is our senses are like fire. And if you've lived through the 1980s, 1990s India, Radha Gopinath Ji Ki Jai. If you've lived through 1980s and 1990s India, you must have seen, whenever India wins a cricket match, especially against Pakistan, people take out tires and burn them on the streets. Have you seen those? At least in Calcutta it used to happen when I grew up. Right? And then in this temple, you have the same fire, but burning incense stick, and the result is very different. So our senses are like fire. Depending on what you put in the fire, you get either bagged poisonous smoke or beautiful, enjoyable smoke. And sense objects are like salt. In the world, when we enjoy, senses have to, you know, senses make sense. That's devotional Vedanta, right? If you put too much salt, you cannot enjoy. If you put too little, you cannot enjoy. The salt has to disappear. It has to be so subtle that it doesn't even come out. And then we are able to relish food. So real pratyahara doesn't mean you know, you withdraw your senses and not engage in senses anymore. Senses need to be engaged. But pratyahara is the example Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita, like a tortoise. Depending on, you know, whenever you want, you can pull back. Right? And, you know, does that answer your question to an extent? Thank you. Right? Are we done? Thank you so much. Vancha kalpataru bhascha kripa sindhu bhyevacha patitanang pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.